and then me. Okay. And then
you are online.
Yeah, yeah.
Good evening, ladies. Thank you all for coming. My name is Yeti Visk. I'm not going to be speaking tonight, but I am making an introduction. You cannot hear me. I'm really here to test the mic. That's what they put me up here for. Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, I'd like to thank Esther Williams, who is right over here, from Shalom Task Force, who came tonight all the way from America to be with us on our first evening for mothers. I'd like to give credit to people who helped us create this program, besides Sheila, Vivian, and Shira, who I will introduce in a moment. I'd like to thank Avital from Shalom Task Force, whose last name I can't remember.
Levin.
Mrs. Sarah Eisman from Detroit, who was very helpful, and Menucha Bialik from our very own neighborhood, who is tremendous help, as well as Mrs. Masha Fabian. If Rev Malinowitz were here, he would be up here speaking, but unfortunately, he is not well, and he couldn't come. So I, first of all, would like to dedicate this evening as a refuah shleima for Rav Chaim Zev Halevi ben Kela. Should have a refuah shleima. But I'm going to have to imagine what he would have said if he were up here, just to give a small introduction. The goal of this evening is not to get our sons and daughters to the chuppah. The goal of this evening is to get our sons and daughters, Be'ezrat Hashem, into a healthy and safe and loving relationship. Having said that, I want to just, what I think Rabbi Malinowitz would say, being a talmida of his Chovas HaLevav Ashir, is that ultimately everything comes from the Rabbeinu Shalom. Everything that we do is just our hishtavlis, because we have to do our hishtavlis in this world. There's actually two hishtavlis we have to do. We have to daven, number one. We have to daven and for siyata d'shmaya. And number two, we have to know what's the best way to get our sons and daughters into healthy relationships, and that's the purpose of this evening. Having said that, it's not necessarily a corollary to the end result. Ultimately, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mezaveh zivugim, and all we can do is our hishtablus. I would like to ask everybody to hold your questions. Please write them down if you can. You all have a paper with a little, what I call cheat sheet, of what was going to be spoken tonight. And I'd like to introduce Mrs. Sheila Siegel from Howard.
Okay, no, Esther Williams speaking.
Oh, Esther Williams will be speaking in a minute. Is that okay if I just introduce him first?
Sure.
Okay, Sheila Siegel is a dating and relationship coach from Har Nof. Vivian Willig, our own very own Vivian Willig, who is a family therapist, and Shira Fruchter, who is as well a family therapist. I'd like to introduce Mrs. Esther Williams from Shalom Task Force to say a few words. Thank you.
Hi, I want to thank all of you for coming. I didn't come all the way from America for this. First of all, I want to thank all of you for coming. Whether your children are in Shidduchim or not in Shidduchim, the fact that you are a community member who cares about this issue already says a lot. I want to thank my presenters who've been working with the Shalom Task Force for several years, all, some of them for even more, presenting to our young women, our daughters, about what a healthy relationship is about. And obviously, I don't know if Yeti mentioned it, but we hope to follow this with a session for our young women, for those of them who have not heard it in a seminary, etc. The Shalom Task Force started 25 years ago to address the issue of domestic abuse in the Jewish community. From there, one of the things that we learned was that in whether abusive relationships or even unhealthy relationships, one of the things that we found was very rarely did a woman say, "I didn't see anything before." It's usually there was something, and for some reason it wasn't addressed. And sometimes that thing is something she should have seriously considered and not gone on with the shidduch. And sometimes it's something that had it been addressed early on, some of the issues that did come up wouldn't have, and it could have been a home of shalom bias. So what we did with that was we started to create prevention workshops. and do trainings for Rabbanim, for mikveh attendants, for challah teachers, for educators, and specifically for parents, because you are the first responders. So I want to welcome you all. I want you to feel free after the session, if you want to contact the Shalom Task Force with any questions, etc., feel free. We'll give you our contact information. And may we all have the schus of our, because of our interest of helping ourselves and our neighbors, etc., of having children with homes of great Shalom Bayis. And thank you very much.
Amen.
Okay. Before we start, I just want to say that, I think Itzi said it. We're going to just do the best we can, okay, in general, in our life, with our children. And this is not like a secret formula to 100% success. This is just doing our bit, doing our hishtadlus, even if it has nothing to do with what we'll be. We just have to be empowered. And that's our goal, okay? So I hope that, you know, our bracha is that it should lead things in the right way, be'ezrat Hashem. But, this is a difficult situation, and I don't want to be minimized, you know, in the next hour, okay? I just want that to be clear. Anyway, before we discuss Yiduchim, or foundations, and by the way, this is for parents of, mothers of boy or girl, okay? So in case we slip, it's because we're used to working with the girls, but it's for boys and girls. The question is our child ready? Okay? And that's a very difficult question to start with. Rav Volpe says in Planting and Building, his shita, which we, you know, generally support, is that if your child wants to go out, you allow them to go out. But if your child does not want to, we do not push them. Okay? For whatever reason, we don't know. But if their friends are starting to date and they get a little bit older and they still don't want to, then already we might, and if we are a little concerned, we might want to ask ourselves what's going on here. Okay, so this is even at the beginning. We want to know what's happening with our child. Is there fear involved? Is there an anxiety? Is there something unresolved? We don't know. So the first question we have to ask ourselves, is our child ready? And if he or she says he's not, or if you think he is not or she's not, we want to explore that. And this is going to come up over and over again. If you cannot have that conversation with your child, then you, and especially your child, should have someone to talk to. This is going to be a running theme of tonight. Mentors, someone to speak to. Sheila's a dating coach. There are other dating coaches. There are people that you just feel comfortable talking to who can figure these things out. So no one should ever feel like this burden of trying to figure it all out by yourselves, because sometimes you just really can't. You don't know. And another issue, obviously, is that when your child decides, or you decide together that he or she is going to start dating, something that we all struggle with, especially as our children get older, is that it is time to kind of let go, lose that control. We're very used to having a mind that we can do it, we can create the child that we think, you know, he or she's going to turn out to be. It's all up to us. I'm sure many parents here have learned before dating age that they may not be true. And if you haven't, then you will learn when they are of marriageable age that really, you really have no control. You do the best you can, but you are not going on those dates. You are not deciding ultimately who they're going to end up marrying. You know, you are not going to be talking for them. It's really their story now. And our job is to try to help and to try to do the best we can, but it's their story, and you need to know when to let go. The idea, though, is to have trust in your child and to believe that your child will have the abilities and the capabilities to build a healthy relationship, and they'll be able to trust their intuition, and they will have a support system to turn to when they have questions, and if they have questions. And that's part of where we come in. And by the way, and I will say this again, no person in this room or anywhere out there should ever feel overwhelmed. You might feel stuck. You might feel like you don't know. The world is open to you. There are people to talk to. So just realize that. Now, what do we do before? Now, this might be a little short if they're about to start dating, but it doesn't matter. Better late than never, or even for your younger kids. Part of our job as mothers is basically to, One, we want to build their self-confidence, okay? An appreciation of who they are, not who you think they're supposed to be, not who your circle of friends think that they should be. Who is your child? Who is your son? Who is your daughter? What does he want? What does she want? What kind of person is he or she? This is also part of, you know, what we call in psychology terms, you know, basically individuation, letting that person develop into their own individual. And it's part of your job to allow that process to happen in a healthy way. We also have a job to teach principles about relationships. Now, relationships doesn't always have to be when you're dating. What are their friendships like? How are they like with their siblings? What are they like with their parents? You might assume that your children know what it means to have a healthy relationship. I have news for you. They really might not. They might not have ever experienced an unhealthy relationship, or they might not even realize that out of all their healthy relationships, there really are unhealthy ones, but they don't know how to pinpoint what that means. They have no idea. Relationships and principles of relationships are something that really need to be developed and understood. Obviously, if you can, through modeling, through discussion, and sometimes you can't. For whatever reason, it's not possible in your house to do that, but you should encourage your child to learn about relationships even outside of your home and get exposed to what it means to have a healthy relationship, and that is critical. What does that mean? Skills. Skills such as what is a healthy dynamic and an unhealthy dynamic. And a lot of them really have experience with their friends, boys and girls, or with teachers, or with siblings, where something is a little bit off. They may not even know that that's off. Or healthy, good, what's positive? Mutual respect and caring and trust and balance, everything balanced. Communication skills are critical. You might think your child, oh, obviously, like he or she knows how to communicate. Guess what? They really might not. They were never put to the test to have to communicate. Maybe you've never given them that opportunity, not on purpose, just it's never come up. Maybe they've never had to say something. Many kids don't have that opportunity. You have to teach them what it means to learn how to communicate, to make things clear, to say what they want, to understand what someone else is talking to them, what that other person wants. Communication skills are very, very basic, and you might think your child has it, but they really might not. How to deal with conflict. I don't know if it's come up with them in their life that they've lived so far. I might not even know. You might not even know. Let's find out. Have they ever dealt with conflict in the past? Do they know how to handle it? Does that mean it's bad if there's conflict? These are questions that you should start having discussions with your child. Obviously, to start earlier on, but it doesn't matter, even if it's from today on, to have these open discussions, what these things mean. Assertiveness. That's a skill. And didn't say aggressiveness, I said assertiveness. Learning to be assertive, to set boundaries, to set limits. Your child should feel comfortable expressing himself or herself, how they feel about something, even if it might, quote unquote, rock the boat, even if it might make someone else uncomfortable. A lot of our children don't have that skill. They're nervous, they're people pleasers. They don't really know how to do that. It's never come up. They don't want to make anyone upset, especially girls. We teach girls a lot in seminaries. And you ask them, do you ever say anything to someone? No, I don't want to do this. No. Okay? It's very normal for people to grow up like this. They're afraid of conflict. I don't like conflict. I'm sure they don't either, even more so when they're younger. They also need to take responsibility for their actions and their words. Some people say something, but they don't mean it. They say something and they don't realize how it's being understood by another person. It's our responsibility as mothers to teach our children how to communicate clearly and make themselves clear and understand that when they say something, they need to mean it. And if they don't mean it, they need to say it in a different way or not say it at all. Again, you might think this is basic. I guarantee you that many of our children do not know what you're talking about. Okay? What does it mean to stand by your word? What does it mean to have clarity? People, at the same thing, a fear of conflict. They don't want to make themselves, I don't know. You have to put yourself out there a little bit and take a risk. But we have to teach them how to do that and feel comfortable doing that. Another thing that comes up with mothering our children is that in school, I don't know boys' education so well, but girls' education, and I'm sure you're familiar with this, and maybe mothers of boys can tell me something else. There's a lot of emphasis on chesed and giving and being mevater and being so good and an eishes chayil and giving of yourself, giving of yourself, giving of yourself. Beautiful virtues, don't get me wrong. They're amazing. But does your child know when that's appropriate and when sometimes that might not be appropriate? When that's healthy and when that might not be healthy? You might think they know. They don't. They have no idea what you're talking about. They don't have the sophistication in their brain to make that differentiation. They really don't. So it's our job as mothers to explain and to talk with them and to discuss and to model that there are times when it's appropriate and times when it's not. You know, the idea, Eishes Chayil never asked for help from her husband. You have no idea what they're being taught. These are beautiful things, wonderful, great. But there are children out there that come out of these classes and really feel like, okay, I don't need anything anymore. I will do everything. That's very nice, but let's see how that plays out, and let's see if that ends up being a healthy dynamic. Okay? It's a virtue. It's a standard. I'm not trying to, you know, demean it, but I'm just trying to say they don't know where to stop to the extreme. They really don't. And, you know, people also think, oh, I'll take, you know, I can change someone. It's okay. A good woman will, with her heart, with her love, she'll take care. Really? Okay. That rarely happens. So you need to know what you're dealing with. Your children need to know. They need a reality check. And it's your job as a mother to talk this out with them, not in any way that makes anyone feel uncomfortable, but these are part of our roles, modeling, discussing, encouraging.
Okay, so the next small topic is intuition. We want to help basically you guys trust yourself and to help you teach your kids and empower them to trust themselves. And the main way to do that is intuition. What is intuition? Intuition is knowing something and not knowing why you know it. So we like to explain that when you're going onto a bus and you're deciding where to sit, very quickly, that split-second decision, you don't know why you chose not to sit next to that person or that guy, but that was your intuition. You had a feeling inside of you that you want to be in that place, not near that person. Or if you're in a park and you have to run to the bathroom and leave your bag with someone, and you make a split-second decision like, can you watch my bag? How did you know that? How did you decide who to ask? That's intuition. And we try to empower our children and our girls when we lecture that this is the key. You now have a word. You have a word to know something that you feel, but you have nothing, no way to really prove that. That's intuition. That's the word, okay? And a lot of it is to trust. We want you guys to have the intuition when you're feeling something, and then also empower your sons and daughters to have their own intuition, okay? And it's kind of like a smoke alarm. That often we know that smoke alarms will go off and it could be there's a cat, there's a heavy wind, and there's really no fire. But intuition is telling us something and we don't want to ignore it. Because the opposite of intuition is denial. And what often happens is you feel something and then you're like, no, I'm crazy, or that can't be, I'm overreacting, and you don't trust yourself. At the same time, you might be wrong, right? Intuition's not always right. Often it's wrong. But the goal is information. Don't ignore that initial feeling. It is so crucial. It is so critical that when you have a feeling, like right now, you're all sitting here, you heard Vivian talk, I imagine you're intuiting something about your child. Whether it's your son or your daughter, something's coming. Oh yeah, my daughter won't do that, or my son would do that. That's intuition. Don't ignore it. It might not be right, we don't know. But it's a signal. We don't want you to ignore your intuition, and we really want to help you help your child hear their own intuition. It is so crucial because, as Esther said, generally when someone does fall into abuse, they felt something and they ignored it. This is a silly example, but I just learned this on my own, that I had a tooth that was bothering me for like 6 months, and I went to the dentist and I told him 100 times, and he took an x-ray and he said, it's just your dental anxiety, it's nothing. And I really told myself for 6 months, this is nothing. And finally I'm like, you know what? I really intuit this is something. And it was a root canal. And I'm saying, like, sometimes you can't ignore yourself. Like, we really feel something inside, and we want to empower you tonight. If you're feeling something, and if your kid comes home from a date, or they're checking it out, or you hear something, or your son says something, just recognize it's a gift. Take that and get information. We don't know if it's right. We don't know if it's wrong. But don't ignore it.
And often also your son or daughter will come home and they'll feel something and you'll feel something. And they're not always the same. Often what I intuit is not what you intuit or you intuit, because we're all so different. So you want to be careful that you intuit something, you go to your mentor, they intuit something, they should feel safe in their intuition. We don't want to shut off their intuition, right? It's a little bit tricky here because they're feeling something and we don't want to be over eager and then they're going to ignore their own intuition. So we really want to empower our children when they're dating to trust themselves, that we're giving them a word. It's a gift. You feel something, just tell someone. Just tell someone. We don't know if it's right. It's a smoke alarm, but don't ignore it. Okay?
All right. So the question that we have is, what do we need to know before our child starts to date? How do we navigate the difficult, you know, path to take when our child starts shidduchim? And there are some of you here who have married children, some of you who have started the process, who have some experience, but came here to learn some more. And that's what we hope to give you information, to give you tools, like Shira said, to empower you. Okay, so what can we do as mothers? First of all, let's understand the idea of compatibility, right? When we're looking for somebody, suitable for our child, we're looking for somebody with a similar background. The less differences there are generally leads to an easier way to resolve resolve challenges and difficulties. Similar ethnic background, Sephardi, Ashkenazi, Hasidic, cultural background, language, values. Again, it doesn't mean that this is a rule that you have to follow. No, it just means that in general, when you're talking about somebody from a similar background, things are usually easier. How do we network? Okay, you and your child have decided, okay, they're in the parsha. They're starting to date. Where do I start? How do I let people know? What do I need to do to let people know that my child is starting? How do I network? Okay, so we have lots of possibilities. Okay, and again, some people might feel, I don't have the same network here that I might have had in Chutz La'aretz, in America or England or, wherever, South Africa, wherever other people are from, right? I don't have the network here. I've only been here 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, right? I don't have the background. I don't have the extensive relatives and, the people who really knew me. But you still have a lot of people. You have your friends and neighbors. You have people from your shul, right? Here's an example of a community, really, that's built around a shul. Shadchanim, whether they are professional or what we call dabblers, right? People who just like to dabble in it, they are also a resource for you. People that you know who also have children who are dating, who are also the similar ages, where do they turn, right? You ask your friends, who have been good resources for you? Where did you turn? The more specific I can be about describing, what my child is looking for is, can be helpful. I don't have to be, I don't have to have every single detail. I don't have to put somebody in a box. But if I can narrow it down a little, you're not just looking for, I'm looking for a mensch. Okay, that really narrows it down. I'm looking for a nice girl from a wonderful family. Got it. Okay. You want to try and narrow it down a little bit more that people have an idea of really what you're looking for. Speak to your daughter's teachers, speak to your son's rebbeim. There's often somebody who is either in the high school or in your son's yeshiva who is he's the designated person. He's the person who helps the boys with shidduchim, and there's often somebody in the high school who also is there to try and help direct you, who you can turn to. But the bottom line is, it's your child. It's your child, and you know your child. There are lots of shadchanim out there. There's lots, okay? I think I have a list at home with easily 100 names, okay, of shadchanim that run the range between professional shadchanim that you actually have to pay for a first meeting to people who just do this as a chesed, and there's a lot of people out there, okay? Some are like agents where they just throw you a name, okay? You call them and you say, hi, I have my daughter, she's, you give us a few details, and she throws you a name, and you say, well, where does the family live? She doesn't give you any details. You don't know anything. She just throws you a name. Here's the name of a boy, and this is the yeshiva he's in, and you've got to do all the homework. There are some shadchanim who operate like that. There are some shadchanim who do research, and they don't give you a name until they have checked it out, and they can tell you really, you know, a lot of things about the boy. They've checked it out personally. Sometimes you have to pursue the shadchan. Sometimes the shadchan, you know, calls you. Anything, right? Anything can happen. You need to find somebody that you feel understands you, understands your family, knows what you're looking for, that you feel comfortable to be able to speak to. You can take each suggestion that you get seriously, okay? But again, suggestions that come from people that know you well and care about you are often the suggestions that you have to check into less, right? If your neighbor knows somebody, right, and it's her, you know, her cousin's, her cousin's neighbor's nephew, right? You might, you know, and I'm not saying you shouldn't check it out, but you might want to check that one out a little bit more than a suggestion that perhaps your sister-in-law makes. Okay, what is the role of a shadchan? Only to give information. That's the role of a shadchan, to give information, which means, here's a boy, this is how old he is, I think, right? This is where he learns, this is what he does, this is where he works, this is, right, whatever, that's what their role is. Their role is not necessarily to give you accurate information. Okay, now some of you might feel like, well, what does that mean? Okay, it means that either their notes are outdated. When she wrote it down, he really was 23, okay, but he's 29 now. She just never bothered to update her notes, okay? Or she never had the right age in the first place. She never really had the right age. Or she's purposely telling you a different age because she thinks that if I tell you A, you won't agree, so I'm going to tell you B. It's not her job. Your job is to verify. Your job is to check things out, not just to accept whatever the shadchan said, because either it's not on purpose that she's giving you information which is not accurate, and sometimes it is on purpose, and it's your job to figure it out. Okay? When somebody tells you about a boy and they say he is a Baal Chesed, what does that mean? Maybe what I consider a Baal Chesed is not what you consider a Baal Chesed. We have different ways of measuring what we call a Baal Chesed. So how do I know what it means? Ask for examples. When someone tells you a quality about a boy or a girl, ask for examples. Okay, I don't like the word nice. Okay, my students all know you can't use the word nice. Okay, because nice means nothing. Everybody's nice. What you can say is you want to find out what are the qualities that are most important to your child. And if for example, honesty is important to your child, you're not going to ask about the boy, right? If it's your daughter, you're not going to ask about the boy, is he honest? Because what will the friends say? Sure, of course. That's not the way to ask the question. The way to ask the question is, I'm sure he's very honest. On a scale of 1 to 10, how honest would you say he is? Now, you're going to get either a 3 or a 7 or an 8 or a 10, right? You're going to get more of a picture of what that means. Now, do I listen to what one person says? I need to get a consensus. I need to listen to, am I hearing from everybody more or less the same information? Am I hearing also from friends and also from other people? You know, you get a resume. And so we all know, yeah, you could call the names on the resume, that's fine, but try and find your own names, people that know you. People that, when you're asking a question, we speak the same language. They know what I mean by that. I just had a call recently. Somebody was checking out a neighbor of mine, and they heard that the mother is quiet, and they heard that she's very neat, which is true, okay? And they were afraid that it was, like, something unhealthy. So, again, what are you hearing? Are you hearing? So she heard, it's true, but are you hearing from enough people that, no, she's actually just a very nice person, she's just not loud? The family is very, you know, the house is neat and orderly, but it's not like an oppressive place to be, right? You're hearing a consistent message, and that's what you're speaking to friends, and you're speaking to family, and you're speaking to whoever, you know, again, understanding that people, and I don't believe that people outright lie, but people don't answer questions that you didn't ask. They don't volunteer information that you didn't ask. If it's important to you, then ask. Okay, that's something which is very important to remember. If you don't ask about something, you're not going to find out about it. Things that are obvious, by the way, people don't necessarily feel they have to mention. He wears a hearing aid. Well, your daughter goes on the date, and nobody told her that he wears a hearing aid. Well, it was so obvious to everybody. Now, that's not a question you're going to actually think of, but you might say, are there any medical issues? Okay, are there any medical issues? Because they assume, well, of course you know. It's so obvious. Everybody can see that he's wearing a hearing aid. listen for what's being said, listen for what's not being said. You're checking out a family. Your people are raving about the mother. They're telling you amazing things about all the siblings. And at the back of your mind, you're thinking, wait, I didn't hear anything about the father. No one said anything about the father. Listen for what's not being said. Listen for what the information you're getting and the information that you're not getting. What are good questions to ask? What can you ask that you're going to get good information? So you could start off and say, tell me about the girl, tell me about the boy. And then the friends will say, ask me specific questions. And this goes both ways. First of all, when your child is writing a resume, when you're putting together a resume, make sure that the friends who are listed on the resume speak about your child in superlatives. Okay? I want to hear enthusiasm. If I call a reference and the friend sounds kind of pariv, why should I get excited? If their friend's not excited, why should I be excited? So it could be a very good friend, but her personality is just, she's kind of quiet and understated. Don't put her as a reference. Put the person who knows how to talk with enthusiasm, because I am going to be affected. When I call up about a boy and the friend says, oh, he is amazing. There's so much to tell you. Where should I start? Oh, I'm interested. Okay, if you're excited, then maybe there's a reason for me to be excited. Okay, the resume. Okay, we could give a whole class just on how to write the resume, but when you're reading the resume, look for, are there any inconsistencies? Anything here not matching up? Like, he finished high school in, you know, a certain year, and then we have a gap of 4 years. Where was he? Like, what did he do those 4 years? They're not mentioned. Okay, they're just like, you know, not anywhere on the resume. You want to check that out. Look and see, what if there's any inconsistencies. What are we looking for? Our kids need to do some homework. I said the question that we need to ask is, how do we know how do we get our child ready for dating? I give two homework assignments when I'm working with somebody. And the first one is, your child has to decide, what are my life goals? Sit down with your child. What are my life goals? What do I want to accomplish in life? And is this the person who's going to help me reach those goals? That's the first thing. If I don't know what my life goals are, how do I know his match? I don't even know what I want out of my life. Okay, it takes a certain maturity. Sit down. They need to sit down and work it out. The second thing is, they need to work out, what are my list of negotiables and non-negotiables? What are the personality, the qualities, the characteristics that are absolutely, I must have it. I can't negotiate on this. Most girls will put kind, considerate, positive, somebody who has simcha, right? A lot of girls will put that. Some girls will put, a sense of humor, intelligence, whatever. I want them to make a list of, these are my non-negotiables. I don't move on these. These are negotiable. And this is the way it works. The younger your child is, the more things they can have their list on non-negotiables, okay? As they get older, we take things off the list. Meaning, when a girl is 26 or 29, you can't have 12 things on your non-negotiables. It doesn't work. When you're 19, okay, let's leave them. Maybe it'll work. But I want them in order of importance. Okay, so as a parent, when my daughter gives me, or my son gives me, the list of, these are the qualities that are most important, and you go over it with them, and you say, yeah, and they say, how does this look? Does this look right? And I tell them, do it either with your parent or a mentor, a teacher, somebody that you trust who knows you. Does this sound right? And it could be they'll make some adjustment. It could be they thought intelligence was very important. They must have somebody who's very intelligent. And you know what? They went out with people who were very intelligent, and you know what? I don't think that has to be number one. I moved it down. It's now number five. I have other things that are more important. And that, right, I say do this list in pencil. And we're going to move this list around a little bit. But you know that when you are checking out, you're going with this list. And if your child put as number one, I need somebody who has Simchas Chaim, okay, I'm going to check that out. And I'm going to ask my 1 to 10 question. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much Simchas Chaim would you say this person has? Or give me an example. He's a Baal Chesed. Give me some examples. What does he do? Because maybe what you think is a Baal Chesed, that's not what they're talking about. We're not necessarily speaking the same language. Okay, and we have to make sure also that our children don't use somebody else's yardstick to measure what is appropriate or not. Meaning, if their friend says, oh, I never go out with a boy shorter than me, so what? If it doesn't bother your daughter, go right ahead, right? If your friend's son says, oh, I don't go out with girls who are, can I say this, larger than a size 2, okay, then what? And if it doesn't bother your son, big deal, okay, right? You can't use somebody else's yardstick. What is good for your child? What do they care about, okay? Chemistry is important. There has to be a an attraction. So we say that if the couple go out and the girl is repulsed, she's repulsed. She just can't stand the way he looks. Okay, that's it. Chemistry didn't work. On paper, it sounded fantastic, but it just didn't go. But if the date was pariv or neutral, right, then it's worthwhile. It's worthwhile going out again. Okay. Okay. I'm not going to talk about it now.
Not going to talk about it now. Wait, you
want to
speak about it now?
I'm not going to speak about it now. Not right now. We'll see.
Okay.
There's time. Okay. After all that, and other things that we will not discuss tonight, we finally get to the date. So, you made it through hoops and hurdles and I don't know what else. I'm not going to make any sarcastic jokes, but you know what I mean. You get to the date, okay? What is your role? You're not going on that date. So how can you... What's your part, okay? So first of all, I want to tell you your part that's like not connected to this. Dr. Levitz, a psychologist, came up with a really accurate term, and it's called shidduch anxiety. It's a real term. It's a real thing. Okay, we have allergy anxiety, we have test anxiety, we have, I don't know what, driving anxiety, and there is shidduch anxiety, and that's actually a real anxiety. How will my daughter have another date? Will she ever get set up again? Will she get married? You know, I think in today's world, we do struggle. You know, there are girls and boys that take a really long time for them to get married. There are people that have been in relationships that didn't work out. These are very real things that every single person in this room can count people in their life that they know this has happened to them. So we have built up anxiety as a result, and we don't know what's going to happen. So just naturally as a mother, we're coming in with a lot of pressure. We want that happily ever after. We want this to work out. And I don't know if anyone's going to ever call me again. This might be it. This might be it. By the way, if you're feeling it, your child's also feeling it. Even more so. So what do we do? First of all, we are a listening ear. That's it. We are a listening ear. I mean, and more. But I'm saying we're not here to push. We're not here to get involved in areas that really might be dangerous territory without the right kind of guidance and information. It's really hard to be objective, which is why we keep on stressing the idea of having a mentor. Okay, this is very, very sensitive material. It really is. And we know how difficult it is. We live in Israel. I'm not, you know, it wasn't like this when I was going out. But in today's day, it really is really, really hard. It's hard to get a date. And it's just a very challenging situation. So when it finally works out, the last thing you want is to kind of be a Debbie Downer, right? So we have to be really, really careful. Now, especially as your child gets older, by the way, you know, if your child is already been dating for several years, obviously the pressure mounts and it makes it even harder for you to be objective. Once again, mentoring is very important and shadchanim are not objective. So what are the basic indications that things are going well? What could you possibly do? So first of all, as Sheila mentioned, there should be somewhat of a baseline attraction. Okay, but there are no absolutes. Sometimes people become more attractive as you go out more with them. I was just telling a story that I once was set up with a guy who was supposed to be the most handsome guy in the world. Everyone's like, wow. As we went on more dates, I'm like, he's the ugliest boy that I've ever seen. Okay? Because suddenly his face changed because I was not into him. And like suddenly I'm like, why does everyone think he's cute? He's so not cute. And it's like your whole vision changes. And it also goes the other way. Someone who you think, I don't know, can become very attractive. So we say there's no absolutes. But if your daughter or son is obviously very repelled and nauseous, attraction is very, very important, but could have potential. Let's see. Your child should overall enjoy spending time with this date. Okay? They should not be looking at their watch or feeling bored or wanting to go home. But even that has exceptions. I'm not going to get into it, but that has to do with what kind of conversations they're having. Maybe they reach a dead wall and like it's boring, but really if someone brought up a certain thing, they can get fired up and things can totally change. So there's no absolutes, but you can check the pulse of where it's going. Now, another thing that comes up is that girls and boys are often terrified. They are terrified. So sometimes what might seem like, oh, this is not the right person for me, it just mean that they're really just terrified and they're scared and they don't even know how to progress because they don't know what they're doing here. This is like, I don't know. So you have to keep your fingers on the pulse of what's going on with your child. Is this really not the right person, or are there other issues going on? Now, this is another part of your role. Pay attention to your own instinct. What's your feel? Okay? What are you getting from your child? Now, everyone here has a very different relationship with their children. Some people are more close, more open, not close, more open, less open. This is the time to kind of develop those channels in a very healthy, healthy way, if it's possible. If not, again, the mentor. It's okay if it's not possible. We're human beings. If your child comes home and says something that doesn't seem to sound right to you, your child thinks it's fine. You need to figure that out. Okay? The child might not realize that that's not appropriate or that something is a little funny. It's your job to work on your instincts when something sounds a little bit strange. Get more information. What's going on here? Okay? You know, there's a million examples. You know, someone told me a story where the daughter was actually literally, she was being set up with the, you know, best boy in the world. She herself, you know, has been dating for several years. And the boy was putting her down. And the mother was horrified. But guess what? When she said, "Do you want to go out again?" she said, "Okay." And her mother couldn't believe it. What? This is a story I heard like 2 weeks ago. It's a very, very new, this is a real story. You know what? I'm sure it's fine. And the mother couldn't sleep the whole night. What? He was talking to her like, and this is the best boy. Thankfully, they went to a rav, and the rav said, "End it." But the point is, it's the job of the mother. If she didn't say anything to her mother, she would have said, "Yes, I'll go out again," and it would have gone, I don't know what would have happened. But the point is, you need to use your instincts. Listen, okay? If she mentions he's so machmir in halacha, he won't even go on a walk with her because he doesn't want anyone to, you know, he doesn't want to see anything inappropriate. Maybe that's fine, but maybe it's not. Maybe it's a little extreme and you should find out more information about it. Things that really, you know, rub you the wrong way, don't let it go. Does it seem like he doesn't really respect your child's opinions? Your daughter or your son is not going to say that straight out. You have to kind of listen to between the lines. Sometimes they tell stories or things that he did or she did that seem a little bit interesting to you or interesting to the daughter and a little bit alarming to you. Look into it. Look into it. If your daughter is anxious about dating, this is what I said before, is it fear or is there something else happening? Is there something about this particular person that's making her feel nervous? This is your job. She was supposed to know, go on to red flags, but I'm going to say my part, and then you're going to say your part, because I think it makes more sense. Okay? Sorry. I'm going to say, because this is more like the helpful to share. She'll get to the scarier parts. It is helpful to share, okay? I'm telling you, whatever. There are things that come up that you may not even realize. When your daughter or son comes home from a date, and you're like, "How was it?" And they say, "Good." And then you say, "Okay, you want to go out again?" Okay. That's not okay. You need to know what was being said. What happened? Because they might think, "Yeah, it was great. Okay, he laughed a little bit. He was a little rude. Or she was this. Whatever, it's fine." No. You need to take that out. What happened? What was so great about it? Did anything happen on it that you didn't love so much? Did you disagree about anything? Did you find anything? How was the conflict? Did anything come up between the two of you? That doesn't mean it's bad, by the way. I'm just saying. This is to get them to start thinking, actually, this and this happened. Now that you mentioned it, they might not even realize. What did you like? What didn't you like? Okay, these are questions to ask because usually people are like, "Oh, I'm so happy. We'll call the shotgun tomorrow." You just missed a major opportunity. He says something like, "Yeah, you know, I never like to be home for Shabbos. It's fine. Whatever, I just don't like it. I like to be away." Maybe that's great. He just likes to be away. But maybe it's not. "Yeah, I'm not so close to my siblings so much." Okay. Maybe we should find out more about that. These are things that you might not even think about that could come up. a person's family dynamic, academic struggles, learning disabilities. I'm not saying it's a no. I just think that you need to find out about it. What does this mean? Sometimes these things have long-lasting impressions. Where are they? Are you, it's just to prepare you to a healthy relationship. By no means am I saying no. You just have to know more. What are we talking about here? Did the person have any negative experiences with relationships before? What's the family's financial situation? You don't have to know their bank account number, but is this a family in crisis? Or are they extremely wealthy? Because that also comes with certain kind of expectation. These are things that you might need to pick up, even if you didn't find out before, just to know what you're dealing with. Do you share the same vision and goals and aspirations? That might be, you might think it's obvious. Obviously, our kids are discussing it. Nothing is obvious. By the way, he might think, wow, she's so much firmer than me. I think that's amazing. She might think, oh, he's so much more intense than me. I love that about him. That sounds nice now. Let's talk about it in a few years from now. Like, you have to be on the same page, and they won't realize something is good or bad. And by the way, maybe it is workable, but you need to talk about it together or with their mentor. What is it like? What does this person do? What are things that are very intense or not intense? Just, are we on the same page? Or is he just cute and interested in going out with me again? Or the other way around? Like, what's the token? When you get into this bubble and it's excitement, you can get carried away and you stop thinking. You're just excited. So we need the mother or the mentor or both to kind of be the practical, objective listener and say, wait, what's happening? And by the way, I mean, I don't know if Sheila, I don't know if you mentioned it, but you know, and we're not going to get into it, okay? Or maybe we will, I don't remember. But the point is, obviously in Israel and in certain Haredi circles, we're dealing with a very short time frame. Now, I'm not going to get into that, but the point is that you do have opportunity if your eyes and ears are open from the beginning or even before the beginning, like Sheila was saying, in the checking out and the actual few dates that you might have. You have a chance, your child has a chance to pick up things, and you as the secondary listener to what's going on, you have that opportunity. It's not wasted time. Every interaction, how does he or she behave with other people in different circumstances? Things can come up. What do they laugh at? What do they frown at? What bristles them? These are things that teach you about a person. Okay, forget about abuse or not abuse. Is it a nice person? Is it a good person? Is it someone that I can relate to? Is this someone that we're really together or I'm just being swept away? This is very critical and you have to be that person. And like, you know, Yitzi said at the beginning, the emunah and the bitachon part and the shidduch anxiety makes you want to just say, whatever, it's fine, it's fine. But the point about the emunah and the bitachon is that Hashem is in charge and there's a long life ahead, so don't be short-sighted. You don't have to find out every single detail, okay? Like, you don't have to, like, hound your child, obviously. You know, but you use your sense and you use your smarts and your wisdom to feel out, you know, with the right kind of questions, what is appropriate and what's not appropriate. You don't have to sit them for an hour and a half and grill them in every detail. But here, what is she like? What is like? What did they say? What came up? What's the family like? Like, in a very casual way. You know, we don't need to get into everything, but it's more the emotional content and the opinions that were expressed by the person and what your child also feels. And you want to encourage her to listen to her voice and not to brush any of those niggling voices aside. So important. And now Shira will continue with that.
The scary stuff.
That's good.
Thank you, Vivian. Okay, red flags. Red flags. Okay. So what's really important about red flags and the things that you do want to look out for is that they're very subtle. And they won't always happen right at the beginning, okay? So keep that in mind. They're very subtle, and they don't happen right away, okay? Red flags. Okay, so you want to look out for someone that gets very serious very quickly. Okay, that would be a red flag. Like saying things like, I love you early, or in whatever form they could say in the society very, very early. Someone that's extremely, extremely charming and comes on very strong. You'll see that all the red flags are very. Okay, you want to think frequency and intensity. These aren't one-time things. Whatever is happening here, it's happening a lot, and it's intense when it happens, okay? Is he contacting or she contacting very frequently, texting a lot, very like aggressive in terms of details, like what they want to know about your child, he or she. So they're asking, attempting to control things like what they wear, what they eat, where they go, who they see. Like that you're sensing some type of like possessive or controlling, but again, it's nuanced. But they're asking a lot of questions, constantly texting, like, what pizza are you eating, with what on top, what restaurant, what time, like really, and again, this is you're intuiting that something here feels like a red flag. Then you're going to get more information, okay? Obviously, if he's speaking or acting abusively, for sure, but you want to notice if they're speaking or acting abusively to somebody else. Like we often tell girls, like, look how they're treating the waitress or the waiter or the person in the hotel lobby or whoever they're contacting, or their own mother or their own sibling. If your son or daughter is noticing how they're speaking to someone in the family, like in a very aggressive way, that would be a red flag. Are they acting hurt when they don't get their way, or when others will disagree with them? We often encourage the person who's dating to have a conversation and ask the person, you know, oh, I noticed you did that, or I noticed you did that, and then see how the person you're dating responds. Are they extremely defensive and very entitled in their response to what you ask them, okay? And again, it's subtle, so when I'm saying very, it's very on a date. Because on a date, we're all on our best behavior, okay? Does this person blame others for their own actions? Okay, something is a red flag. Unwilling to take no for an answer. Okay, you see sometimes a person gets very aggressive in terms of their time, like when they can go out or what, how many nights in between, or they can't handle no, so that would be a red flag.
But you know, I think it also it's not always so obvious.
Right, it's not always so obvious, thank you. Yeah, like it could be more subtle. But you're noticing, like, every time your daughter comes home or your son comes home, like there was a pattern of, like, it's always that person's way. You want, again, you want to be, it gets a lot of intuition, and if you're not sure, just ask someone. If you guys are not sure, just ask someone. Okay, but you're noticing something. We want to always try to be careful between like a childish, immature behavior and then abusive behavior. Okay, like sometimes these kids are, they're young, so maybe they're still doing something a little bit childish, but they're not abusive at all. One of the ways that you could differentiate would be to ask your child or notice, are they on eggshells? Okay, that the person shouldn't be afraid. That your child should not be afraid to ask this person a question, communicate, assert themselves in some way. If you're noticing that your child seems afraid or anxious in an unhealthy way, so again, that would be a red flag. Okay, you'd want to ask. If the person they're dating is extremely moody, that they'll switch on and off from being very nice and then being angry or explosive in any way. Explosive, again, you're not going to see explosive, but explosive for dating. So again, that would be a red flag. Okay, so these are type of behaviors that are red flags. Okay, so when this happens, you need to encourage your child to share with you, and you yourself, as their guide, would want to intuit and ask someone, okay, what you should do. What is imperative for my child to share before they go on a date? At this point, you want to have some type of conversation with your child so that they know what's really imperative to share with you or with the mentor, whoever they're going to be talking to, and you want to really make sure that they have someone to talk to. If it's not necessarily you, that's totally fine. It's not a reflection of your relationship with them at all. Really, really, it does not have to be, okay? It could just be they're not safe or comfortable, they love you too much, you know what I mean? But they want to have someone to talk to, okay? And you want to really teach them that this is imperative. They really need to share these things, okay? The following things. So number one is the red flags, okay? That they should, you can get a feel in your home. They might know this already just from growing up in your home of what you consider to be okay or not okay. But you really teach them that if they feel something, they felt scared, or they felt like an eggshell, that they need to tell you that. It's really imperative that they share that with you or with their mentor or with their Rebbe or with their teacher. It doesn't have to be you, but that it has to be shared. Toxic relationships thrive in secrecy. This is a crucial point, okay? Any toxic behavior, it gets worse when it's hidden. That's how it thrives. It gets fuel from being protected and hidden. Okay. Often, God forbid, is in an abusive situation, it will protect or hide the person's behavior, and it only gets worse. Okay, so at this stage, you want to really teach this concept, like we teach our young children, that like if someone tells you, "Don't tell mommy," or "This is a secret," that means tell mommy. Right? That's what we teach young children. It's the same thing here. It's the same idea. Toxic patterns, unhealthy patterns, they're gonna thrive if it's kept a secret. And we want our children to feel safe and confident to just share it. It doesn't mean anything's going to happen again. It just means that now they got it off their chest. They told it to you. And you can make a decision, an informed decision of what you want to do with that information. Again, it could be it's nothing. Okay? So you want them to share the red flags, and you want them to share something that he might have done that makes her feel uncomfortable or him feel uncomfortable. Again, that knot in the stomach. Intuition. That if they feel something, they should. Nothing is too small to share with me. You could always share it with me. You could always just tell mommy or your mentor or your teacher, your Rebbe, like anything that you feel, we trust you. We trust you. You should trust yourself. Okay? So red flags and intuition. And specific examples of behavior or like a midah or a character trait that would concern them. Okay? That they felt for themselves is questionable. And again, they're not sure. But you want to tell your child, if there's anything that you felt was uncomfortable, you weren't sure of, sweetie, just tell someone, just ask someone. Let's just get information, okay? Psychological, behavioral, or mental illness that's untreated. They need to share, okay? If they hear that the person they're dating has bipolar, if the person they're dating struggles with OCD, is anorexic, and they're not being treated, they need to share that. Again, we don't know what we'll do with it. We don't know. We really don't know, but we want our child to share because toxic relationships thrive in secrecy. We don't want them to have to feel like they have to hold this on their own. They need to feel there's somewhere that someone's going to accept and hear them. Okay? And then they'll decide what they want to do with it. Okay? And lastly, is just any serious misgivings or doubts. Anything that they really feel like this just feels like I'm doubting something here. Something didn't feel right. Okay? Again, there are a lot of overlapping in terms of like what they're picking up on. And you know your child. So you'll know if they're the type of child that naturally will share, easily will overflow, are more of a transparent child, less of a transparent child. You guys are intuiting that right now. Like I believe everyone right now is intuiting their own child. Okay? And so you'll already have it. I want to hear your question so badly, but I need to be forced to keep it to the end. Then write it down. I'm sure it's a great question, and everyone has it probably. But I'm sure you're intuiting whatever it is that your child's going to struggle with and how they're going to relate information or not, okay? And you want to also add that in, okay? That these are things that they really need to share, okay? And you want to encourage that they could have the most accepting, non-judgmental person to share it with, okay? Unspoken rules, okay? So now we're just shifting to one other topic. Unspoken rules, and this is a really important idea to just be aware of. We all are bringing our kids up in a different home, and there's so many things that we do that we take for granted. That in one person's house, bringing a Heinz ketchup bottle to the Shabbos table is a zero. In another person's house, it's the biggest insult. Okay? In one person's house, it's literally like, grab all the condiments. In another person's house, it's like, that means my chicken doesn't taste good. Now, these are things your kids don't realize because it's just how we grew up. So we call it unspoken rules. And often when you're going out with someone, something can happen on the date that they might wonder about. Like, oh, he asked me, like, I don't know, what I carry in my purse. And your child might feel like that was so boundaryless. And someone else might feel like, you can totally check. I don't care at all. I've been going through my mother's purse and some too. Right? So these are unspoken rules. So what you want to recognize is these are just things that you want information on. But your child should feel comfortable to trust that they're feeling or noticing something. That's not a red flag at all. Okay? It's just something that they notice that's a little different than themselves. Right? But that they shouldn't ever feel shut down. And you want to encourage them, whatever you notice, you feel, just tell someone. Nothing happened. You're just going to talk about it. You're just going to tell someone, and then we'll see what happens, okay, from that information. This is not a time to be Dalankov Schuss. It's such a sad thing to have to say out loud. So the way I like to say it is that we want to be Dalankov Schuss, but we want to do it actively. Okay, so I like to differentiate between active Dalankov Schuss and passive. We don't want to teach our children at this point to be Mevater and Dalankov Schuss in their head. We want them to be Dalankov Schuss in an active way, which basically means something seemed really weird, something seemed a little bit off, he wasn't so nice to me, let's find out about it. And hopefully there'll be a great story we could tell about Dalankov Schuss afterwards, because we've heard so many of them, we really have, where there's cute stories and nice, happy endings. But don't be passive with Dalankov Schuss, let's talk about it. Don't be Mevater now. This is not a time for Batranos, it's really, really not, and we don't want to encourage our children, even though we have a shidduch anxiety, even though we really want them all to get married, we don't want to encourage any Batranos right now. We want the child to be able to really feel like, don't be short-sighted, let's be active about our Dalankov Schuss and try to find that information that will make this story so pretty. Okay?
Can I just add something?
Yeah, for sure.
I just want to add to that.
if you see something also like someone else in your family, like not necessarily your own child, but let's say a niece or a nephew or your friend's child, and you might think, oh, I don't want to get involved because, I don't know, it's not my business. I'm sure I didn't understand. When something seems very obviously wrong, you should tell the mother of the couple, because I do know of a story where a lot of signs were there and no one wanted to tell the mother because they just felt like, oh, it's not my business. I don't want to say. And then afterwards, the mother of the whatever felt like, where was everybody? Here everyone saw things that I wasn't able to see and no one told me. And if I would have known this, it would have been precious information that I could have done something with. Now, I don't say this lightly. Obviously, ask a Rav or discuss it with someone. But just sometimes these things are very difficult, and these are difficult questions. No one wants to share a shirach and blah, blah, blah. But sometimes things really do come across, and you're in a dilemma, and we're required to a little bit go further, not just say, oh, I probably misunderstood. Obviously, you ask a whatever. But I'm just saying, like, I've seen it happen, and a lot of pain probably would have been, let's say in this example, avoided if someone would have just said, yeah, I didn't, that you should have, whatever. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
No. And the last point is, again, just 1 minute on mentoring, is that you really want to be honest with yourselves as you sit here if you're your child's best mentor, okay? And again, it's not a reflection of your relationship with your child. It's really not. But it's important to recognize that they really need to have someone they could talk to, as we've said about all the things they need to be able to talk to them about. And to figure out with your child or just who you can encourage that they could speak to. Okay, they should feel safe. Maybe a role model in the community, or it shouldn't be a single friend. It should not be their friends. It's really not an objective party. It could be a dating coach. Actually, the Siegel, she's great. But really either a dating coach or maybe an older sibling that's married or an aunt, or maybe it's you. But they should really feel like they know who they're going to go to. When we do these workshops, we insist that every single girl has someone in their head before we end the workshop of who they will go to talk to. That non-judgmental, accepting, comfortable place for them. That they could share all these things that come up, hopefully just good things, but any of the red flags or signs or intuition, they have someone they could talk to, so that's crucial.
And by the way, if they don't, we're going to give out the hotline.
Yeah.
The Shalom-Tasters hotline, because a lot of people don't.
There's a number on the bottom of the page.
Okay, so you could be from Israel, you could think, but that's the point of this. Even if it's questionable, you don't know. No one else, you or your child, can call this number to kind of, you know, share your concerns and questions.
Okay, I think just going on about this point about a mentor, it's somebody, obviously, that your child feels comfortable talking to. And some is good a relationship that you might have with your child, sometimes they don't want to hurt you. I work a lot with older singles, and sometimes an older single says, you know what, my parents just want me desperately to get married, and they're not objective. Okay, and a shadchan also is not necessarily objective. They need somebody objective that has no vested interest in, yes, this boy, not this boy, and they're able to take that little bit step back. Saying that, also parents should have mentors, right? As a parent, it's important for us to also have mentors, people that we can talk to, whether it's a friend who's more experienced, or whether it's a Rav or the Rebbetzin, or somebody that we can talk to. I work a lot with parents who are dealing with Shidduchim for the first time, and they say, well, I don't know what to do. And because I don't know what to do, I can't really help direct my child and can't give them really good tools. I want to be more empowered, and I want to have tools to be able to give them. So that's important to remember, that it's, you know, that we need to have somebody as well. I don't remember, Vivian, Shira mentioned about medical issues. So it's the accepted procedure in, if somebody has a medical issue, is generally everybody asks their own Shila, but in general, it's as the relationship is getting a little more serious, okay, so let's say on a third or fourth date, that's when the bipolar or the OCD or the other conditions would be mentioned. And you know, that often people don't say it on a first date. Okay, a girl who has, she's diabetic. Okay, she doesn't say it on the first date. And only on a third or fourth date, when things are getting a little bit more serious, then she'll say, okay? And then she'll say, here's the number of my doctor, you know, check it out. I had a case where with my daughter, she was going out with somebody. On the third date, he told her a piece of information that he had a medical condition, which was a very serious medical condition. And he gave us the phone number of his doctor, and we called the doctor, and the doctor said, does your daughter have a medical condition? And I said, no. He said, then this is not for you. Okay? So I could not understand why the mother... So what would happen is this boy would go out, and he would get to the third date, and he would... You know, and I actually called the mother with a suggestion with a girl who had a medical condition she would inherit. Okay? Now, we all have to be honest with ourselves. You know, what is, again, a learning disability, or, you know, what is considered a medical issue, right? The fact that, you know, your child might take Ritalin, is that a medical? Do I have to say that? A lot of people are on, you know, antidepressant medication. Do I have to say that? Please ask your Rav. Okay? We want to ask a Rav, but we don't want surprises. We don't want to be surprised, and we don't want to surprise anybody else. When we were talking before about, you know, checking out and being, you know, being the person who checks out for your child, you know, here we are, like, we're living in Israel. And I don't know about the rest of you, but, like, Hebrew is not my first language, okay? English is my first language. Now, I mean, I can speak Hebrew. I've been here, let's see, how many years? 37 years, okay? I've been living in Israel 37 years. I actually do speak Hebrew, okay? But there's still nuances that I don't have, okay? I'll give you an example, and maybe some of you recognize this. You know, my kids came home from school one day, and my daughter said, oh, my, you know, this class, chaval lazman. And I said, well, that's not a nice way to talk, to say the class was a waste of time. And she said, that's not what it means. It means it was amazing. It means it was great. Like, that's not what it means, okay? You don't get the nuances. You need somebody. And I have six kids married. I still, like, when I was... You know, if I would check out for my daughter, I would have one of my older sons call the boy, you know, the boy's friends. What are they hearing? There's a language, there's a jargon that they understand much better than me. So you want to think that maybe if you're checking out a boy who's learning in an Israeli yeshiva, or he's got Israeli friends, and on the resume it will say, speaks English, speak Hebrew, right? If you're speaking to people who speak Hebrew and that's not your mother tongue, maybe you want to have a Hebrew speaker, okay, who understands those nuances, they might be better prepared to ask those questions, and it's fine. Okay, we're going to do things the best possible way for our child. Okay, another thing that's important is that we want to have what's called an elevator pitch. Okay, we want a short way of when somebody says, oh, your daughter's in Shidduchim, well, what's she looking for? Okay, you don't take out your, like, 16-page list and say, oh, you want to know? Oh, okay. And, you know, no, you know, they don't want the 45-minute spiel. They want the elevator pitch, which is 30 seconds, what's your daughter looking for? So we call it four and four. Four things she's looking for and four things about her. So that you have a picture very quickly and very easily when you meet somebody, right, when you're networking, okay, that's what she's looking for, that's what she's like, okay, I got the idea. No matter what, level of, you know, of the religious level or who we're talking about, whether we're in Israel, whether we're in America, there are stages in dating that we all have to go through. And if we can sort of explain to our kids what are those stages that we have to go through, they're going to do a much better job. Okay? The first stage of dating, okay, and whether that first stage is one date or two dates, okay, depending on, you know, on the relationship, okay, the first stage of dating is very superficial. Okay? I don't want to call them kids because they're not kids. If they're dating, then they must be adults, right? So I tell these young adults, you know, there is a purpose for every date. Every date has a purpose. We don't just go out to have fun. There's a purpose, right? If we're dating for marriage, every date should have a purpose, which means there should be a progression. Date number one and date number five should not look the same. Okay? There should be a difference between the beginning and, you know, a subsequent stage in dating. So the first stage of dating is the potential. The only question that your child is asking is there potential here? Not, am I going to marry her? No, that's not the question. The question is there potential? How do I know there's potential? Do our life goals match? Does he or she have most of the top qualities that are most important to me? Is there attraction? Is there chemistry? Right? Again, chemistry doesn't have to be that I'm super attracted on a first date, as long as it's okay, right? The more you like somebody, the more attractive you find them. And it could be that on a first date, you know, you were told that he has a great sense of humor. You don't see it, right? Because, you know, as Vivian said, he could just be very nervous. He's nervous. I once met a boy, he was literally shaking on the date. He was shaking. He was so nervous, okay? Some people are nervous. He's not going to, you know, be his best if he's going to be very nervous. You have to give it a chance. the first question they ask is there potential? If there's potential, then you move on, okay? But again, the first stage of dating, there's no surprise questions, which means that you know the answer. How many kids in your family? Hopefully you know the answer, okay? What do your parents do? Hopefully you know. You didn't have to rehearse that one. It's not surprise questions. You're asking, in this first stage of dating, there's nothing you have to think about. You know the answers. Okay, now, there's always the purpose of dating, there's always two purposes. One is, I want to get to know him, and I want him to get to know me. Okay, what do I want to share? What do I want him to know about me? So one of the purposes that we think about in dating is, what would you like him to know about you at the end of the date? What would you like her, right? What information do you want her to have at the end of the date? Okay, and that's important. I tell girls, boys are very visual, by the way. Okay, boys are visual. Like, in 30 seconds, now I don't like the way she looks. Okay, and you're like, what do you mean? You know, it's very visual. Girls usually will give more of a chance to boys, even if they weren't crazy about the way he looked. Boys are much more visual. Okay, so with that piece of information, make sure your girls look good, right? It doesn't mean that they have to go have professional makeup done. No, that's not what it means. It just means they have to look their best. Boys are visual. It's like, you're walking by a store window. Okay, why do you go into the store? There's two reasons why you go into the store. One of the reasons is it looks very attractive. The other reason is I need a pair of shoes, and that's a shoe store, right? So I'm on the date. Why do I want to get further, right? Well, I'm dating because I want to get married, but this looks attractive. I'm going to go in. I want to find out more, okay? The first stage is only just get to know you. It's very superficial. It's what we call airplane talk. How you would talk to somebody on the airplane, you're not sharing any deep, dark secrets. It's, just casual conversation. I tell people you want to ask open questions. Open questions are not how many children in your family? 6. Okay, next question. No, it's going to sound like an interrogation. It's not an interrogation. It is a conversation. So an open question would be, tell me about your family. Okay, tell me about your family tells you a lot. First of all, what's he going to say? You'll hear a lot in that question. You'll hear, what's his relationship maybe to, with his family? Okay, so we want our children to know, we want to guide them. We want to be able to help them that they should date successfully. And dating successfully doesn't necessarily mean that there's a ring and a chuppah at the end. It means that they felt they presented themselves the way they want to present themselves. They were able to, like I think Vivian mentioned about communication, they're able to express themselves. They're able to say who they are. Right? So that's the first one. The first one is just the breaking the ice, and it could be a few dates. What happens in the second stage? The second stage, again, we don't have a number. There's no number, right? For some couples, it's one date. Maybe it's two. Maybe it's three. The second stage of dating is getting to know each other better. I'm trying to find out more about this person. I'm going to share my life. Did you ever think about this? A husband and wife, it's the closest relationship that we have. And we're not even blood relatives. Like, 6 months ago, you didn't know him. Now you're married to him. And now this is like the relationship that's closer than siblings, closer than parents. And we do this, we have to get to know this person. Thank you. We have to get to know the person. But the third stage, thank you so much. The third stage is probably the most important and the most difficult for our couples. Suspense, right? Just taking a drink. Okay, so what is the third stage? What are we trying to do in the third stage? We're trying to create an emotional connection. And this is where a lot of our kids get stuck. They get stuck on, how do I make an emotional connection? They're okay with, what does your father do? What does your mother do? How long have you been in Israel? What was it like for you coming when you were 12? Okay, they got through that stuff. Okay, they got to know each other. They shared some stories. But now they need to make an emotional connection. How do they do that? A lot of them don't know how. They don't know how to make an emotional connection. That's where they get stuck. They get stuck, and that's when they say, I don't know, the dates just aren't progressing. There's no movement. I don't feel like I'm getting anywhere. It's boring. I don't feel any connection. So we have to create that. We have to give them tools how to create connection, because that's what they need to do. And they are not able to progress until they've moved there. Okay? So how do we do that? So I told you, every date has a purpose. Okay, I'm thinking before the date, I want my child to be thinking on the way there or before, okay, what do I want to achieve in this date? Well, let's see, I want to know more about what his relationship is like with his family. Okay, that might be, so I'm going to try and steer the conversation that way. I want to find out his long-term plans. what does he, you know, where does he see himself? You know what question, this is a question I tell everybody to ask. Tell your sons, tell your daughters. This is a great question. Tell me what your Seder Hayom is. What's your typical day like? Okay, what do you get with that question? You get to hear, what's he passionate about? Okay, a girl went out and she asked this question because I told her to ask this question. So she said, she asked the boy, well, what's your typical day like? And he started telling her, well, you know, he was learning. He said, okay, well, you know, I learn. And he was like, sort of like, you know, speaking in a monotone until he got to his afternoon. What did he do in the afternoon? He worked out at the gym. And his face lit up. He was passionate. He spoke with excitement. And she said, oh, no, that's not what I'm looking for. I'm not looking for the guy who's excited about working out at the gym. I'm looking for the guy who's excited about his learning. Okay, so if we ask somebody, what's your typical day like? You're going to hear a lot about, again, it's an open question, but you're going to hear a lot about who he is and what, you know, what's important to him. So how do we build that emotional connection? So first, we need to, on date number one or two, he told you that his family made Aliyah when he was 12. Okay, and they came to Ramat Beit Shemesh. And this now, when you want to make an emotional connection, you want to find out, how did that feel? How did it feel to come when you were 12? How did it feel to leave all your friends? The stories are stories. Those superficial stories, fine. But how did it feel? Okay? When you share, and you share, and yes, it means making yourself vulnerable, which is not always so easy, and especially when your son or daughter had been dating a long time, and they've done this so much, they don't want to open up anymore. I don't want to be vulnerable anymore. It hurts. It's too hard. But it's the only way to get married. It's the only way to get married. I can't make a connection with somebody unless I open up. Yes, I have to make myself vulnerable, share. Now again, it doesn't mean you share you were suspended in fifth grade. No, that's not what I mean you have to share. Okay? You don't have to share that. You don't have to share information that reflects negatively on you. But you want to share your feelings. How did it feel? Right? How does it feel? If he told you, on the first date that his father is a brain surgeon, how is that for your family when your father has such a, you know, pressure job, right? You want to know more about the feelings. That creates emotional connection. Then I have another rule. Okay, I have a lot of rules, and these rules are not, this is not Torah Misinai. This is just rules that I find helpful, guidelines that I find helpful, compliments. Okay, when somebody comes back from the date, your son comes back from the date, and he says, wow, you know, it was great, it felt really good. Why does he feel good? Because there was a positive environment, there was a positive atmosphere, and she made him feel good. How? By giving compliments. Now, it's not appropriate for him to give her a compliment on how she looks, okay? That's not appropriate for him to say, wow, you look great in that dress. No. And what's she going to say? Love your tie? No. So it's not going to work like that. But what we can do is he tells her that every month he goes to visit his great uncle in the nursing home. That's an opportunity to give him a compliment. Wow, that's so kind of you. I'm so impressed. That's a compliment. Creates connection. We're trying to create connection, okay? There's no physical connection, so we're trying to create connection by talking, giving a compliment. When whatever it is, you've got, and I say, let's try and give two compliments per date. Two compliments per date. We're focusing on areas where we can give somebody a compliment, acknowledgement, validation, something, and that's going to create a good feeling. He comes back from the date, and he says, wow, that was great. What was great? I don't know. I just feel so good with her. That's what feels so good, because she made him feel good. Okay, we want to tell, I tell this to boys, okay, so tell this to your sons, please. If you meet dating protocol in Israel. Dating protocol in Israel is whatever you want it to be, okay? So either the parents meet him before, or only the father meets him before, or the mother meets her, or whatever you want, or you don't meet before. That's fine. But if your son is meeting a girl's parents at whatever stage of dating, the first thing he says, first of all, he talks to the father, and he says, oh, it's very nice meeting you. The first thing he says to the girl is, such nice parents. Really enjoyed meeting them. Your father made me feel so comfortable. Your mother give her a compliment about her family. Okay, that's the first thing you do. You say something nice. Tell your sons this, right? Tell your sons, you know, shake hands, prepare something to say. But what you say to the girl is, it was so nice to meet your parents. Your parents are so nice. I was so impressed with your father. He made whatever, find something to say, because now the girl's going to, wow, he likes my parents. Ah, okay, you got really good points there. Okay, you got some points. What else creates connection? doing different kinds of activities. Don't do the same activities. Don't just sit in a hotel lobby. Don't just go to a coffee shop. Do different things. Go to the zoo. Go on a picnic. Sharing food. Very intimate. It's very intimate to share food. Let her bake some cookies. Bring cookies that she baked. Let them go on a picnic and they bring, I don't mean on a first date. I mean, we're now on the third stage, but we're trying to create an emotional connection. So bring the cookies, let him buy the drinks, or whatever. It's going to be, there's an emotional connection when you share food with somebody. If your child feels drained by the dates or feels no connection after four or five dates, it could be that it's time to end the dating. Okay? Ask your child, would you be sad? Would you be relieved? How would you feel if the dating stopped? Okay? The third stage is really a friendship stage. Okay, John Gottman, who's a well-known family therapist, right? He says marriage is friendship. Can you be friends with this person, right? Is it the kind of relationship you can have with a good friend? Okay, when we were talking about red flags, a red flag is giving gifts that are like inappropriate, like it's too expensive. Giving an expensive gift too early in the relationship. But what is appropriate? What is appropriate in the relationship? So you know you were talking about your fate, you know, you love penguins. And so, you know, you're on a sixth or seventh date and he brings you a little stuffed penguin keychain. Okay? It's fine. Right? You're bringing up something which is a shared experience. You're trying to have a lot of shared experiences. Okay? Making that through getting personal and sharing, we're making that emotional connection. So what's the next stage? The next stage is being ready to make a commitment. Okay, now. In Israel, there's no number. Okay, I can't give you a number. You can't say, oh, after X amount of dates, you should be able to know. It's not true. But if your daughter is going out, and she's going out, and she's on date number 10, and date number 12, and date number 13, it should be clear to the other side where she is holding emotionally. You have to say to the other side, either I'm really not sure where this is going to go. I'd like to continue, but I really don't know where this could go. It could go either way. That's giving the other side a heads up because he's already planning the engagement party and she's not even sure she wants to get engaged. Or to say, she's pretty much... Okay. She's pretty sure this is it, but, she needs a little bit more time, but it's pretty much a go. Okay? Israeli versus American-style dating, how many dates, right? Again, there's no timetable. What feels right for your child? You can't force your child a certain amount of dates. But if you see that they're just dating endlessly, you want to figure, find out, well, is what's the point and where is this going? Okay? Okay. I'm gonna stop there. I know. Okay.
This is good
stuff. Yeah, I know. It's time. Fine. Okay. Yes.
Even just that, what did anything happen on the date that made you feel good? How did he make you feel?
Okay, but you were very specific on the negative side. I'm just wondering if there's anything specific.
Well, negative is, right. But definitely, but it is important to say, did he do anything that made you feel good? Any interesting conversation come up that you found that you understand each other? There is definitely a lot of potential of positive things, for sure. And I think you're right. It shouldn't just be about negative, but also encouraging the positive, And again, all back to how you feel. What's he like? How did you find his manner? Those are a little bit more open-ended, but could be either way.
Maybe I'm going to answer that one. It's definitely a question of if you're an Anglo, do you limit your child to only going out with people from similar background like you, or is it okay? Can they date Israelis? If your child feels comfortable with an Israeli mentality, then you don't have to stop them if that's what they feel comfortable with. Because at the end of the day, how much connection do you have with the other side? Very little, right? You make a wedding together, maybe the first bris or something. Like, you see them at simchas. They don't have to be your best friends, but you want that other, the other person, you want them to, the more similarities and the more things that we have in common, it's more comfortable. Our culture is important. Does your child, there are a lot of people whose children, I only have one child that married an Israeli. Everyone else married English speakers. But it's fine, right? It's not a problem because, right, I just have a funny story. I invited all my kids for a barbecue. So she said to her husband, "Oh, we're invited to my parents for dinner." He's like, "What? Your mother's inviting everybody for eggs?" Okay, because like Israelis eat eggs for supper. He's like, "No, we're having a barbecue." Okay, it was just like something. So it can be, it doesn't have to be anything major, but there can be cultural differences. If your child is comfortable, you don't have to limit it, right? What your child is comfortable. I think you can let your child, be your guide. And what do you feel comfortable with? Right? Sometimes it's very hard to check out. When you're checking out an Anglo, it's so easy. Oh, yeah, sure, I have so many connections. Oh, they're from Chicago? Wait, I know somebody from Chicago. It's so easy. Israelis, you don't have necessarily the same connections, and it's harder to check out. So that is a concern. That would be probably my biggest concern is, how do I really check them out when we don't share, people that I can check out? I think the right message is you need to check it out, right? When you have something that doesn't fit a standard, right? This doesn't fit the standard, box. Then it just means you need to check it out more. Speak to people in the yeshiva he left. What was the reason he left? It's not unusual for a boy to move around a little bit, and it doesn't necessarily mean there's something wrong with him, right? I wouldn't say that.
It also have a lot to do with what your daughter needs.
Yeah.
I think the first question is, if your daughter is looking for the next Gadol Hadar, this boy sounds like a lovely boy, but that's not who he is. If your daughter is looking for Joseph, that's not her highest priority. I think it goes back to the conversation. What does your daughter see her life looking like? What are the highest priorities in her life? No, he sounds like a very nice boy.
Consideration. I'm not saying.
Right.
But I wanted to know what you meant. Like, it was very
you need to speak to people from the first yeshiva. It's not a red flag in and of itself. It's not. There are plenty of boys who do that, and plenty of boys who just want a little more of a chilled place. It's not a bad thing. Again, but you'd want to find out how did he leave? Does he still have a relationship with the people there? Did he leave on good terms? What do they say about him? His friends there, Rebbeim, Ramim. You want to find, and if you do know somebody, if you know somebody there, whose son is there that you can talk to, somebody that, like, when you ask a question, they're speaking to you in a, in a language you understand. They're using terms that resonate with you. Yes, that's what I mean.
I was going to say, I don't think it's a dangerous red flag, like the ones I was describing at all. It's very normative in the system. You might want to get more clarity with the meaning
exactly.
of this.
No, but why do you want to talk about
But I don't think switching yeshivas indicates a dangerous red flag. I think it indicates that you want more information.
Right.
You know what I mean? Really.
Right.
Just get information, clarity. What is the meaning of it? Not the what, the how. You know what I'm saying? Switching yeshivas could be a nothing.
Right.
It could be he's just a very in tune person and self aware and recognize he wasn't doing matzliach tonight. Yeshiva.
Marla, sorry.
I feel like probably Marla many of us in this room have issue with the fact that our kids are being brought up in a very different culture than we are. I'm going to give three examples that didn't necessarily get told to my children, but we've discussed as moms. One, make sure she comes with an apartment is what the boys are being taught. That's not necessarily my family values, but your kids are really, really being taught to love and admire their Rebbeim and their seminary teachers.
Right.
Seminary teacher, if you're in Shana Bet and not dating by Pesach, then you're not doing your Hishtadlus. It doesn't matter if you feel ready or not. Was told. That I'm told that they were told. The third one recently, if nothing's wrong, then it's right. You don't have to, you know, like, if it's not wrong, then that's good. That's
and another point, if I can add one point, is I think they're a little bit brainwashed of only going to go into to be a boy that can learn. And A, that is not everybody boy. Every boy can learn. And secondly, it's a big pressure on the girl. Not everybody, every girl can support a family for several years.
Right.
And as she says, with the apartment, not all of us can give an apartment, which would reduce the pressure of earning so much to support the boy learning.
The conflict is that you want your children to admire their mentors and their people. That's our goal, is so that they should look up to that and to respect it. But we're coming...
It's a very irresponsible statement for somebody to say that every girl in Shana Bet is ready for dating. Okay, it's simply not true.
Or that she should marry a boy who's looking for her.
Okay,
yeah.
It's simply not true.
They can't even go into good professions because that's on top of it. Because you can't go to university, you can't go here and there. So, I mean, where on earth is the girl supposed to earn enough to support the boy in learning? I mean,
Okay, we're not going to solve all the problems here. But as parents... We're not going to solve all the problems, but as parents, we do have, we've educated our children, and, you know, as much as they're hearing from somebody, you should be dating in Shana, you know, when you're in Shana Bet, I definitely tell my Shana Bet students, please don't date, okay? Because unless you are emotionally ready, and you're mature, and you're responsible, you're setting yourself up for disaster, okay? So I'm not saying there aren't girls who are ready. There are girls who are ready, but it's not a blanket rule for everybody. You have to know, and your child has to know, are they ready? And it's okay to wait. They don't have to. There's no, who's going to pick up the pieces when they did something because everybody was doing it and it wasn't right for them.
Specifics. It might be something that would be a next talk that we're bringing up our kids in a very, very different world and mindset than we might
I just want to answer Marla, but also Yitzi wants to say something. I just want to say quickly, I think that was the point of tonight, is that it's very nice and we should respect that, but the idea is in conversations with our children to create that balanced approach, which is to allow their teachers and their mentors and their education, but also that you come in and you say, you know what, you're right, and validate, but we also have something to say and we're all a team together, and, you know, it's not easy, but I think that is the point, that it has to come in and it has to first, the children also need to settle and need to see that there is a greater world between what they're being told, and you have to be strong and you have to be empowered because ultimately God gave you this child, and if he gave him or her to you, that means he knows that you know what you're doing. And that was the whole point, to be strong and to realize, you know what, I also have a say and we can talk about this. It's not you're bad, he's bad, I don't know what they're saying, but in a way that, and it is confusing for children. They're very black and white thinkers, correct. But over time, especially as they mature, that's part of the maturing process, to realize, you know what, that also makes sense, Mom. Just because you say this doesn't mean that they're wrong. There's different ways to look at it. Sorry, but Yitzi wanted to say something.
I just wanted to say that I just want to make a comment on this, and then I'm going to ask the question. Ultimately, what we're really looking for our children is a husband who's going to be kind, hearing, good midos, and take care of our daughters. That's really the bottom line. Afterwards, we can talk about, is he learning, is he not learning, where he's, what he's doing. But the ultimate thing is, he is going to be in the driver's seat, and we want to make sure our daughter is a safe passenger. And I think you had a question, Emma.
Yeah, this is also helpful, but is there a way to have some sort of like program for me personally, it's my daughter who's the oldest, who's starting, just classes, We need to hear all these things. They need to be trained.
Right.
They have no idea. So, and she, my daughter has two friends who just got engaged after 2 weeks, 4, 5, 6 dates. I don't want her to feel like pressure that she has to find someone. She has to be
giving that advice. We're doing it for the girls.
Yeah.
What?
It needs to be like a program. Like there is a program starting.
There is a program.
A few weeks we're going to be advertising the lecture for the girls. There's so much that I can do. We need like
100%
practical training.
100%.
I wonder, as what do you feel about the pressure of the dating in Israel? Like, to go out Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, or like
twice a week. You want to keep a momentum, but not generally. Not you don't want to do more than twice a week. They need some time to think in between dates, but you want to keep a momentum. So in general, it's about twice a week.
I'm just wondering. I hear a lot here about the mother and the daughter, and I imagine the scene: the daughter comes home from the day, and the mother's waiting there to have this discussion with her. And I'm thinking opposite, given that my oldest are boys, they go right back to yeshiva dorm. Would you recommend actually having them come home after the date to process? Because I mean, I'm very good about intuiting what if they're not feeling well, I can pick up on their voice, or if they had a rough day, something down. But I can pick all of that up on the phone very, very well. I'm just not sure I can have this discussion about how the date went and the fine nuances of the date through the phone from the yeshiva dorm. Would you recommend encouraging the boy to come home after the date that night before he went back to yeshiva the next day?
So some of the boys prefer to date from the house because they don't want all their friends to see that they're going out. So some boys will date from the house and they will come back. Sometimes it's just a practical consideration. Where is he dating? Where is he dating? Where's his yeshiva? What does he have to go to, and where does he have to come back? Sometimes he wants a little time to think. Boys, often they want to sleep on it. They want to think about it. There is a designated person in the yeshiva who is that go-to person that they have to talk to. And he's very experienced in general. He's very experienced in helping, to let a boy talk out his feelings and, pick out the important points and what's not important.
So it's less of the role of the mother.
It is the role of the mother as well. But again, it's just sometimes practically, technically, where is the child? Where is he learning? Where does he have to get to? Where was the date? Is it practical for him to come home first?
Yeah. Besides that, I have a daughter who gets married and she didn't always come home after the date. Okay. Mm-hmm. Just that that it's not automatically the girls come home.
Right.
She was a daughter counselor at the time. So
there's something called a cell phone as well. You can
call. Right. Just saying it's over the phone. It's not.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Okay.
In their 20s, who absolutely don't want to have anything to do with the shelter. They would like to find someone on their own, but they have still been brought up in mostly, gender segregated schools and everything. What people don't get there, sort of.
A shadchan doesn't have to be, a professional shadchan. It could just be somebody that knows them. Right, it's just somebody, a friend, who makes a suggestion. Oh, or a very good place to start is who are your good friends going out with? Are any of the people they went out with, that weren't suitable for them? Is it suitable for you? So that's also, a possibility.
Or ask her what she has in mind.
Sometimes they need breaks. You know what I'm saying? Like, it is too much. You have to respect that. And it's a lot. Again, this is the communication. What bothers you about that? What about just tons of people get set up on blind dates? It doesn't have to be. And you should know, I don't know so much about it, but recently there was a mixer in this town. Okay, good. I don't know details, but I thought it was great, and it was in a very appropriate setting. So there is potential sometimes where they're not comfortable, where they can enter certain, places.
There are speed dating events for older singles under religious auspices. Yes. Yes.
And I don't like luxury car. So then I heard something from someone on our resume, called us straight after and said, someone just called. And let me tell you how this conversation went. And they went bad-mouthing whoever called to father, mother, I don't know. Not to me, to my daughter. Okay. So I called the Sheikh Hadi, and she said, well, it's 100% luxury car, so you can't accept anything.
I think you need to ask a Rav.
She asked her Rav.
You ask your Rav.
So I don't take things like that. But I did want to, because you said you can't be the Alachas Chut. Just that the whole point is I'm basically trying to dig up dirt. So then my husband starts making phone calls and I'm not hearing anything bad. So I said, everyone's lying to you because the Rav said everyone's going to lie. So for sure you must be taking something. And the friends are telling you, and for sure he's not getting up in the morning, and for sure, because at this point I feel like everyone's lying, no one's saying the truth. I don't know how to find out the truth.
I don't think that's true. I don't think that people.
I
don't think that people outright lie. I don't think that that's going to be that's the general behavior. I think in general people answer what you ask, and if you don't ask, they don't say. But I don't think people outright lie. I'm not saying there aren't people who maybe, you know, put a, you know, like play around with the truth a little bit. But again, you want to hear. You heard from six people the same thing. I think you can pretty much rely on it. Okay. Don't have to accept information you heard from one person. But if you heard from six different people, from six different sources, a piece of information, I think you can pretty much, you know.
Call six people, as it's supposed to be enough.
Everybody's different. If you're an FBI agent, then.
Do you believe in calling the people that are on the resume?
Not necessarily. No.
Because I feel like they're on their side.
Mm-hmm. Fine. For
oh, but by the way, you can have a mutual. Yes. How you ask? It's hard. Or try to ask a cousin question. Like if you have a certain fear, ask a cousin question. Ask a question that's related, that's not that direct. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, that would give you other.
You should also test out your sources.
Right.
You should have someone else, your friend, let's just say, call for you. Call, like, I want to find out about, you know, let's just say I put Candy on my daughter's resume, and I had Alana call Candy and be like, hi, you don't know me, but I want to find out about, you know, the Willigs, and see what Candy has to say, because sometimes, first of all, may not just be excitable, like we said, enthusiastic, and sometimes you don't know what that person is saying, so you should always double check that your people that you put on are saying things that you want to hear, and you might have to do a little bit of that to just double.
If you're putting somebody on your list, you should please tell them that they are on your, that you are a reference, right? If you're putting your friend down, please say, you know, I put you down as a reference. Is that okay? Give them a little bit of a heads up that they're going to be getting phone calls, that they should have a little bit of preparation.
You know they're getting phone calls.
Yes.
Because you know, it's an excellent point you're just making, because if someone calls them out of the blue, they may say something, and they may not say so enthusiastically. But Sheila knows that on the reference, they'd be more enthusiastic.
Possibly. But I think it's fair to give people a heads up that you're going to be called about, you know, about my child. You know, that it's, in all fairness, but again, it could be that you weren't on the reference, and I just know that you're friends, so I'm calling you anyway, which is also a possibility.
I was called for a reference, and I asked the person who called me, who are you?
And they didn't
and
want
they
to
refused
say.
To identify themselves.
Right.
Is that a red flag?
No. It's very normal.
It's very normal.
You might not like it, but it's very normal.
Okay. I always thought we are told they are.
I'm calling about a shidduch for so and so. I want to check out.
Say my name.
You don't have to say your name.
Okay.
No, you don't have to say your name if you don't want.
Okay.
Two more questions,
and then we're gonna.
You spoke a lot about reaching out for help, that the parents should have a mentor, the children should have a mentor, and from experience that I've seen with friends and myself, there's a lot of like young therapists, or old therapists, or therapists that have done this course or that course, or even rabbanim or seminary teachers. And they're not always giving the right information. Like, I've approached with red, like things that I was totally felt uncomfortable with. And they said, you don't say no. Wait for them to say no. Mm-hmm. Like, your status is to continue. And it was totally wrong.
Yes. It is. Absolutely. There are people out there that don't know what they're saying. Yeah. And it's scary. And
so
it's really true.
You're
right.
So no, you have to be choosy about who you about who it is that you speak to.
But it's not so easy. Like you go to someone and it takes time to get to know them. Where you go to
Okay, I just said that the hotline in America is totally confidential. By the way, you don't have to give your name. You should not give your name. The people who are talking have had intensive training and have been doing this for years, and they will give you resources of professionals, let's say you do need a therapist, of somebody who has been, they know, gets it. Mm-hmm. So if they're giving you a referral, you know that referral has been researched.
But is there anything like that? Yes,
they also give information for Israel too. Hopefully. We have, wherever you're calling from, we have information.
It is a big thing though, and it has come up where mentors have given wrong advice. I mean, this happens a lot. He does, and you're right.
You need to check your mentor.
And as a mother, you have a right to call up that mentor. It's not, let's say, forget about a therapist. It's not. There's no confidentiality between a teacher and a child. And you have a right to call up and say, I'd like to know, are we on the same page? And, you know, we both have my daughter or my son's best interest, and I'd like to see what's going on here. You have 100% right to do that. Therapy is a little trickier because there's laws of confidentiality, but with a teacher, absolutely, and it should be done because you are 100% right. And tell your child, if a mentor ever says, don't discuss this with your parents, don't tell your mother, that's no good, terrible, and it's happened. And that already, you know something is bad going on. There should be transparency and open communication.
Right. And what about after marriage? Like, was that not the same
thing? It's a different topic. But I want to point out also that, for example, in coaching, I work a lot with people. I don't tell people what to do. And I do get people that come to me and they say, so should I marry him? What, I'm going to make that decision for you? No. I will help you get clarity. I will help you work out, you know, what is concerning you, what the points are. But I will never make a decision for somebody, right? That's not my responsibility. That's
be anybody's.
It's the person who's dating who takes that responsibility. You can help direct them. And as a parent, again, you weren't on the date. You can't make the decision. And as a parent, you're not going to say to your child, oh, it's fine. Don't worry about it. It'll, you know, it's just cold feet. You'll be fine after the wedding. We need to figure out what exactly is going on here. And, who, you know, your child is the one who has to make the decision. We can help them. We can help them think. We can help them realize, well, you know, what is it that's important to me? What is it that's disturbing me? But, you know, they are. The bottom line is they're making the decision, and that's we have to give them the tools to be able to make that decision. If she's happily married,
you want to be sure that would not think about it isolated. Who would you want to be advising your daughter if it's not you? You want someone with the maturity, with a big perspective, someone who's not going to focus on their own personal experience but has enough experience to be able to look at the big picture. That young girl has her own experience. She doesn't have that maturity. She doesn't have that depth of experience. So ideally, no. You want someone with a little bit more
life experience. Life experience.
Last question.
I'm just trying to, I want to get a little idea, a little more clarity with what's the balance between, like we were just saying here, and we started off the discussion with, this is really our children's decision. But when we feel that we have some intuition or we see red flags, and we're not the mentor for our child, in addition, you know, what's the path to being able to have some influence or be able to say something so that our child is listening to that intuition and being aware of those red flags.
What's your relationship with your child? It boils down to, do you have good, are the channels of communication with you and your child open? Then, you know, do they never listen to you? Do they sometimes?
Sheila, it's also how you're going to present it to your child.
Correct.
What about the kid that always listens? That's also a problem.
Really controlling, and she's already involved in this with this young man, let's say, and he's already got that aspect of control, and you're really frightened and you're scared. If you come on and say to her, we don't like him, we think he's controlling, blah, 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 what are the chances are that she's going to be able to hear you when she's already kind of in his influence? And so how you have that conversation with her, Mama, look, these are our concerns, we're seeing this, you seem to be behaving a little different, you're not the Hanalo we always knew, and you seem to be, or you changed the way you dressed, and I'm really concerned. If you just not, without putting the person down, but trying to get her to open up a little bit, would be a conversation. But once you make a statement, he is controlling, he is abusive, we don't like this, you shut the door.
So you're saying that the parents should be having that conversation? Or
I think if you have a good relationship with your child, you definitely can have the conversation.
Someone else who's trusting and...
It depends.
It's the same thing like, how does the neighbor or the friend or the whatever, know how they see something and they want to, say something or not. How do I say it? So...
You're going to say it in the way that's where you think it's going to be accepted, the most easily. Where will it be heard?
And the whole point is also that we start this process from the beginning, that there should be open communication before even, just to see, how did it make you feel? How was this? You're already starting. You're not just saying, yeah, yeah, until suddenly you see something. You want to start from the beginning, like we said, even from before, like teaching them what the relationships are, what you think that is important, what's healthy, what's not healthy, what should you keep your eyes out. This starts before they go on their first date, before you make your first phone call. And if you haven't done it till now, start tomorrow. Like, it's never too late. And, you know, developing that kind of rapport in a very, like Esther said, like a very gentle,
not judgmental,
loving, caring way. And if you need to involve another person, you can have, like I said before, you have that conversation with the mentor. You know, we both have, you know, my daughter or my son in mind. What do you think about it? You have to be careful. You have to be careful. Because that person might have a different opinion, but you are the mother. You are the mother. You're the parent. You know your child more than any other person. And trust your gut. And do with it what you can in a very smart, loving, non-judgmental way. And that's the point. Do it. It's a slow process. This is a slow process. This is why we started this. Because it's not just one day, oh, it's bad. Okay. Yeah, they might not listen. You have to develop that. What are you seeing about your daughter? Like, it's all in the way. But if you have more questions, really, this is what we're here for and what this hotline is here for. Like, a lot of things come up.
More of these.
Yeah, but again, you also want to mention one thing. If you want to notice in the relationship, if you've seen anything previously with friendships, mm-hmm. like if you're noticing a relationship that's specific to this dating situation, or you've noticed that your child is often a victim, often a bully, like, things don't happen in a vacuum. So if you can notice something in the kid that you can empower just the child and that specific trait, do you know what I mean?
Sometimes,
meaning it's just to keep in mind the pattern.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Looking back in the history.
For sure.
It can be.
It's just keeping an eyes and ears open.
Notice, yeah.
That's the whole point. Just start. And every case is very different. Okay? Thank you so much for coming. And you should just have a brought coffee, Matsuyah. Sorry. Vitti, you want to say something?
I just wanted to say, if you haven't signed the sheet and would like to be contacted by Sean Power Force, please come here. We also have handout sheets. If you haven't taken one, there's a whole pile of them. Thank you for coming.
Over here, we have a synopsis of what we said, and if anyone wants a sample resume.